When Albert Camus penned The Myth of Sisyphus in 1942, Europe was engulfed in the darkness of World War II. Perhaps it's no coincidence that his meditation on life's fundamental meaninglessness emerged during humanity's darkest hour. This slim philosophical essay has since become a cornerstone of existentialist thought, resonating with everyone from college students experiencing their first existential crisis to celebrities like David Bowie, who cited Camus as a profound influence. The book's cultural impact extends far beyond philosophy departments. Its central metaphor of Sisyphus eternally pushing his boulder has permeated popular culture, from references in films like The Matrix to songs by artists including Regina Spektor. But what makes this work so enduring? Perhaps it's that Camus doesn't just diagnose our condition of absurdity, he offers us a way to find dignity within it. Imagine waking up tomorrow suddenly aware that everything you've been striving for is ultimately meaningless. What would you do? This is precisely the question Camus invites us to confront. Life moves along in its predictable rhythm until suddenly something shifts. You're performing your daily routine, commuting to work, buying groceries, scrolling through social media, when a question bubbles up from somewhere deep inside. Why am I doing any of this? This moment of awakening, when the mechanical nature of existence becomes painfully apparent, is where Camus begins his exploration. This awakening isn't merely philosophical, it's visceral. Picture yourself suddenly feeling like a stranger in your own life, as if you're watching yourself perform in a play whose script makes no sense. The world that once felt familiar now appears strange, even hostile. Time, which once flowed unnoticed, now weighs heavily as you become conscious of its relentless passage. The props and settings of your life, your apartment, your office, your relationships, suddenly seem arbitrary and foreign. This feeling of exile from the comfortable homeland of meaning is what Camus calls the absurd. It's the confrontation between our human desire for clarity and purpose and the universe's cold indifference to these desires. It's the moment when we realize we're asking questions to which the universe provides no answers. What makes this awakening so jarring is that it often arrives without warning. A loved one dies unexpectedly. A career you've invested decades in suddenly feels empty. Or perhaps nothing dramatic happens at all. You simply find yourself standing in line at the grocery store, watching people move about like automatons when the question hits you, is this all there is? This awakening forces us to confront the most fundamental question of philosophy: is life worth living? When the scaffolding of meaning collapses, suicide emerges as a logical consideration, not as a dramatic gesture, but as a rational response to an irrational world. Yet Camus insists that this is precisely where our inquiry must begin, not end. The awakening to absurdity isn't a conclusion, it's the starting point for a new way of engaging with existence. The absurd isn't simply a fancy philosophical concept, it's the fundamental condition of human existence. Imagine standing before a mirror that suddenly doesn't reflect your image correctly. You reach out, but your reflection moves differently. This disorienting disconnect mirrors what Camus calls the divorce between man and his life, the actor and his setting. Our minds crave order, meaning, and purpose. We want the universe to make sense, to follow rules we can understand. We want our lives to matter in some cosmic ledger. But the universe offers no such assurances. It exists without purpose, without concern for our desires. This irreconcilable gap between what we want from the world and what it actually provides is the essence of absurdity. Consider how we navigate daily life. We create elaborate systems, religions, philosophies, social structures to impose meaning on a fundamentally meaningless universe. We tell ourselves stories about why we're here and where we're going. These narratives comfort us, but they don't change the underlying reality. The universe remains silent to our deepest questions. The absurd manifests in countless ways. It appears in the mundane repetition of daily routines, wake up, work, sleep, repeat, that suddenly seem pointless when viewed from a cosmic perspective. It emerges in the realization that, despite all our scientific progress, we still can't answer the most basic questions about why we exist. It surfaces in the jarring awareness that death awaits us all, rendering our struggles ultimately futile. But the absurd isn't just an abstract concept, it's a feeling. It's the vertigo that hits when you suddenly see your life from the outside. It's the nagging sense that you're playing a game whose rules were invented to distract you from the lack of any real purpose. It's the uncanny sensation that reality itself is somehow off-kilter. What makes the absurd so powerful is that once you see it, you can't unsee it. The comfortable illusions that once structured your existence begin to crumble. And in this crumbling lies both danger and opportunity. The danger is nihilism, concluding that nothing matters and surrendering to despair. The opportunity, as Camus will show us, is finding a new kind of freedom in facing this condition head-on. When confronted with the absurd, most philosophers throughout history have made a fatal move. They've tried to escape it. Camus calls this philosophical suicide, a desperate attempt to restore meaning where none inherently exists. It's like building an elaborate sandcastle as the tide rises, pretending the waves won't eventually wash it away. Consider how existentialist philosophers have approached this dilemma. Kierkegaard, faced with the limitations of human reason, made his famous leap of faith into religious belief. He acknowledged the absurd, but then escaped it by surrendering to God. Heidegger recognized man as thrown into existence, living in anxiety due to his awareness of death, but ultimately retreated into abstract ontological concepts. Jaspers, after acknowledging the failure of knowledge, embraced transcendence. Shestov saw the absurd as evidence for God's existence, requiring a leap into irrationality. These philosophers all follow a similar pattern. They recognize the absurd, but then abandon reason to escape its implications. They're like someone who diagnoses a disease correctly, but then prescribes magic as the cure. Camus sees this as intellectual dishonesty, a refusal to live with the full consequences of their own insights. Religious faith represents perhaps the most common form of philosophical suicide. Religion provides ready-made answers to life's unanswerable questions. It offers cosmic justice, eternal purpose, and the comfort that someone is listening when we cry out into the void. But for Camus, this comfort comes at too high a price, the sacrifice of intellectual honesty. To embrace religion is to pretend the absurd can be resolved when it can only be confronted. Even secular philosophies often commit this same error. Marxism, with its promise of historical inevitability and utopian future, offers another escape route. So do philosophies that place ultimate value in abstract concepts like progress or humanity. These are sophisticated versions of the same evasion, attempts to conjure meaning from a universe that offers none. What makes philosophical suicide so tempting is that it works, at least temporarily. It soothes the anxiety that comes with facing the absurd. It provides comfort, community, and a sense of purpose. But this comfort is purchased at the cost of intellectual integrity. It requires us to pretend we don't see what we've already seen, that the emperor of meaning has no clothes. Camus challenges us to resist this temptation. Instead of leaping away from the absurd, he suggests we should stare directly into it. Only by maintaining consciousness of the split between our desires and reality can we respond authentically to our condition. If suicide, whether physical or philosophical, isn't the answer to the absurd, what is? Camus proposes a radical alternative, revolt. Not as a political act, but as an existential stance. Imagine Sisyphus not just accepting his boulder, but embracing it, finding dignity in his defiance. I draw from the absurd three consequences, Camus declares, my revolt, my freedom, and my passion. These three elements form the foundation of an authentic response to life's meaninglessness. Let's examine each one. Revolt means refusing to reconcile yourself to the absurd condition. It means maintaining a state of constant tension between your desire for meaning and the world's silence. Unlike philosophical suicide, which tries to resolve this tension, revolt means living within it consciously. It's saying, I know this makes no sense, and yet I persist. This revolt isn't about changing the world, it's about changing your relationship to it. Freedom emerges when you realize that without cosmic meaning, you're liberated from external authorities that claim to provide it. If no path is inherently more meaningful than another, you're free to create your own values. Traditional morality often relies on some higher purpose, pleasing God, fulfilling your nature, maximizing utility. Without these foundations, you must choose your own ethical path. This isn't nihilism, it's radical responsibility. You can no longer hide behind, I was just following orders, or this is just how things are done. Every choice becomes genuinely yours. Passion is the natural response to recognizing life's brevity and ultimate meaninglessness. If this moment is all we truly have, if there's no eternal reward or cosmic significance, then the quality of our experience becomes paramount. The absurd man doesn't seek more life, quantity, but more from life, quality. He embraces experiences fully, without illusions about their ultimate importance. Think of how food tastes better when you're truly hungry. Awareness of limitation enhances intensity. These principles manifest in specific ways of living that Camus illustrates through archetypes. Don Juan embodies passion by fully embracing each love affair without pretending it will last forever. The actor lives multiple lives within one lifetime, embodying different characters while knowing each performance is temporary. The conqueror takes action in the world while recognizing its ultimate futility. Each archetype represents a different way of extracting maximum experience from a finite existence. The ultimate expression of revolt comes through creation. The artist creates knowing their work will eventually crumble, just as we live knowing we will die. Yet in this conscious creation lies a special kind of joy, the joy of expressing human dignity in the face of an indifferent universe. Creation becomes an act of defiance, saying, even though this won't last forever, I make it matter now. At the essay's conclusion, Camus returns to the Greek myth that gives his work its title. Sisyphus, condemned by the gods to eternally roll a boulder up a mountain only to watch it roll back down, becomes the perfect metaphor for the human condition. But Camus offers a surprising twist. One must imagine Sisyphus happy. This counterintuitive claim is the culmination of Camus' philosophy. Sisyphus represents the absurd hero, someone who continues to push his boulder despite knowing it's a futile task. What makes him heroic isn't success, which is impossible, but consciousness. He knows exactly what he's doing and why it's meaningless, yet he persists. The critical moment in Sisyphus's story isn't the struggle up the mountain, but the walk back down to retrieve his boulder after it has rolled to the bottom. During this brief respite, he has time to reflect on his situation. He becomes fully aware of his fate, and in this awareness lies his triumph. His fate belongs to him, Camus writes. By fully accepting his condition without false hope or despair, Sisyphus transforms punishment into choice. The gods intended his task to be torturous precisely because it's meaningless. But by embracing this meaninglessness, Sisyphus deprives them of their power over him. He makes the absurd his own. This isn't mere stoic resignation. Sisyphus doesn't just endure his fate, he owns it. The difference is crucial. Resignation implies suffering accepted passively. Sisyphus's happiness comes from active engagement with his condition. He doesn't pretend his boulder pushing has cosmic significance, but he invests it with personal meaning through his attitude toward it. We are all, in some sense, Sisyphus. We all push our boulders, careers, relationships, creative projects, knowing they won't last forever. Everything we build will eventually crumble. Every achievement will be forgotten. Every relationship ends, if not through conflict, then through death. Yet we continue pushing. The absurd hero finds dignity not in false hopes of ultimate success, but in the quality of engagement with the task itself. The mountain climber doesn't climb to reach a permanent summit, but for the experience of climbing. The lover doesn't love to achieve eternal union, but for the experience of loving. The artist doesn't create for immortality, but for the experience of creation. Sisyphus teaches us that meaning isn't found beyond the absurd, but within it. His example shows us how to live without appeal, without looking to heaven for validation or purpose. He demonstrates that even in a meaningless universe, the way we carry our burdens matters. His happiness isn't despite his condition, but because he has made that condition completely his own. Camus' philosophy might seem abstract, but it offers practical guidance for navigating our daily existence. How do we apply these ideas to ordinary life? How does awareness of the absurd transform our approach to work, relationships, and personal growth? Consider your career. Many people spend decades climbing corporate ladders or building businesses, only to wonder at the end what it was all for. The absurd perspective doesn't mean abandoning ambition, but approaching it differently. Instead of working for some distant future reward or recognition that may never come, or may prove empty when it does, you might focus on finding value in the work itself. Like Sisyphus with his boulder, you can find dignity in the pushing, not just the summit. This applies equally to creative pursuits. Writers often obsess over publication, artists over exhibitions, musicians over record deals. But the absurd creator knows that even successful works eventually fade into obscurity. What remains is the experience of creation itself, the daily engagement with your craft. As Camus notes, creating is living doubly. The process becomes the purpose. Relationships, too, are transformed by absurd awareness. Love becomes more precious precisely because it's temporary. Rather than seeking the perfect, eternal relationship, another form of philosophical suicide, you might embrace love's inherent limitations. Each connection becomes valuable not because it will last forever, but because it exists now. This doesn't mean becoming cynical about love, quite the opposite. It means loving more intensely because you're fully conscious of love's fragility. Even mundane routines can be approached through this lens. The morning commute, grocery shopping, household chores, activities we often perform on autopilot, can become sites of absurd awareness. By bringing full consciousness to these moments, you transform mechanical existence into chosen experience. The coffee tastes different when you realize each cup is one of a finite number you'll drink in your lifetime. This approach doesn't eliminate suffering. Camus isn't offering a path to perpetual happiness or suggesting that awareness somehow makes pain disappear. Rather, he's proposing a way to find dignity within suffering. When tragedy strikes, illness, loss, failure, the absurd perspective offers not comfort, but clarity. These experiences aren't meaningless because life is meaningless. They're part of what makes a life yours. Perhaps most practically, absurd awareness liberates us from comparison and external validation. If no life path is inherently more meaningful than another, you're free to define success on your own terms. The lawyer who becomes a baker, the executive who steps back to spend more time with family, the person who chooses an unconventional lifestyle, all can find justification not in social approval, but in the quality of their experience. The absurd thus becomes not just a philosophical position, but a daily practice, a way of bringing lucidity to each moment, of choosing your life rather than merely living it. While the myth of Sisyphus focuses primarily on individual responses to the absurd, Camus' philosophy doesn't end with personal revolt. In his later works, particularly The Rebel, he expands his thinking to encompass collective action and human solidarity. This evolution offers important context for understanding the full implications of his absurdist philosophy. The move from "I revolt, therefore I am" to "I revolt, therefore we exist" represents a crucial development. individual revolt against the absurd naturally extends to solidarity with others facing the same condition. If my revolt gives my life meaning, recognizing that others are engaged in the same struggle creates a bond between us. We share not just mortality, but the dignity that comes from facing it consciously. This solidarity isn't based on abstract principles or utopian ideals, approaches Camus consistently rejected. Instead, it emerges from concrete recognition of our shared human condition. We're united not by what we hope to become, but by what we already are, beings striving for meaning in a meaningless universe. This forms the foundation for what Camus called relative humanism, a commitment to human values without pretending they have cosmic validation. The timing of the myth of Sisyphus is significant here. Written during the Nazi occupation of France, the essay emerged from a context where resistance wasn't just philosophical, but literal. Camus himself was active in the French Resistance, editing the underground newspaper Combat. His exploration of revolt against the absurd paralleled the real-world revolt against fascism. Both required maintaining dignity in seemingly hopeless circumstances. This connection between absurdist philosophy and political engagement challenges the common misinterpretation of Camus as promoting detached individualism. The absurd man isn't a nihilist who withdraws from social concerns. He's someone who engages more authentically precisely because he has abandoned false consolations. By rejecting both despair and hope, he can act in the present without illusions. Camus' vision offers a middle path between the extremes that dominated 20th century politics. He rejected both the blind optimism of progress narratives and the cynical realpolitik that sacrifices present humans for future utopias. Instead, he advocated for measured rebellion against injustice, rebellion that remembers its limits and refuses to become the very thing it opposes. This balanced approach remains remarkably relevant today. In an era of political polarization, environmental crisis, and technological disruption, Camus' philosophy provides a framework for engagement without fanaticism. It allows us to fight for human dignity without pretending we're on the right side of history or that perfect solutions exist. The absurd thus leads not to isolation, but to a deeper form of connection. By abandoning metaphysical comforts, we can discover what Camus called the solidarity of chains, the bond formed when humans recognize their shared limitations and still choose to act together. This solidarity doesn't eliminate the absurd, but transforms how we live within it, moving from solitary revolt to collective resistance against everything that diminishes human life. Nearly 8 decades after its publication, The Myth of Sisyphus speaks to our contemporary condition with remarkable clarity. In many ways, the digital age has intensified the absurd condition Camus described, making his insights more relevant than ever. Consider how modern technology has transformed our relationship with time and meaning. Social media creates an endless scroll of content, a constant stream of information without clear purpose or conclusion. We check our phones an average of 96 times daily, each check a mini-Sisyphean task that never reaches completion. The digital boulder keeps rolling back down, demanding we push it up again. Yet, unlike Sisyphus, we often lack consciousness of our condition, scrolling mindlessly rather than engaging deliberately. The internet has also amplified our awareness of the universe's vastness and our relative insignificance. We're constantly exposed to the immensity of human suffering, the complexity of global systems, and the enormity of cosmic space, all through devices we hold in our hands. This juxtaposition of the infinite and the intimate creates precisely the kind of cognitive dissonance Camus identified as the root of absurdity. Work has become increasingly abstracted from tangible outcomes. Many jobs now involve manipulating symbols on screens rather than creating physical objects or directly helping others. This abstraction can intensify the sense of meaninglessness Camus described. Without concrete results to measure, the question, "Why am I doing this?" becomes more pressing. the corporate world's tendency to cloak routine tasks in grandiose mission statements only heightens this absurdity. Even our leisure has been colonized by productivity logic. We optimize our workouts, gamify our habits, and quantify our sleep. Activities once done for their own sake now serve instrumental purposes, creating a new form of the mechanical existence Camus critiqued. We've become efficiency experts in pursuits that ultimately lead nowhere, perfect embodiments of the absurd condition. Yet digital culture also offers new possibilities for the kind of conscious revolt Camus advocated. The internet enables communities of meaning to form around shared values rather than geographical proximity. It allows for creative expression outside traditional gatekeeping systems. It facilitates the spread of philosophical ideas that might otherwise remain confined to academic circles. Camus would likely see both danger and opportunity in our digital landscape. The danger lies in new forms of philosophical suicide, algorithmic bubbles that shield us from confronting life's fundamental questions, endless distraction that prevents the moment of awakening, digital religions that promise technological salvation. The opportunity comes from the potential for greater lucidity, tools that can expand our consciousness if used intentionally rather than habitually. What would an absurd approach to digital life look like? Perhaps it means using technology consciously rather than compulsively. It might involve creating digital content without obsessing over metrics or validation. It could mean engaging with social media while maintaining awareness of its inherent limitations. Most importantly, it would mean bringing the same lucidity to our online existence that Camus urged us to bring to our offline lives, seeing clearly what we're doing and why, without illusions about its ultimate significance. The digital Sisyphus, like his mythological counterpart, can find dignity not by escaping his condition, but owning it completely.